ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Down here, it shouldn't be covered. I'm sorry, but this needs to be so I can turn it. See, that's better. Okay, that's good. Okay, forgive me. Okay, all right. On this 29th day of March, 2013, in Los Angeles, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, translation commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in Canto 7, Chapter 9. Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers. And we are on text number 9. Manye dana bijana rupatapaha sutaujas teja prabhava bala paurusha buddhi yogaha Naradhanaya, Hibavanti, Parasya Pungso, Bhaktya, Tutosha, Bhagavan, Gajayutapaya, Manye Dana Bijanaru Patapakshutaujas, Tejak Prabhava Bala Paurusha Buddhi Yogaha Naradhanaya Hi Bhavandi Parasya Pungso Bhaktya Tutosha Bhagavan Gajayuta Paya Manhe dhanabi janarupata paksutaujas Tejak prabhava bala paurusha buddhi yogaha Naradhanaya hi bhavanti parasya pungso Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayutha bhaya Please chant. Manhe dhanabi janarupa tapakshutaujas Ejak prabhava bala paurusha buddhi yogaha Naradhanaya hi bhavanti parasya pungso Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayuta paya Manhe dhanabi janarupa tapakshutaujas Tejak prabhava bhala paurusha buddhi yogaha Naradhanaya hi bhavanti parasya pungso Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayutha bhaya. Manye dhanabhi janarupa tapakshutaujas. Tejak prabhava bhala paurusha buddhi yogaha. Naradhanaya hi bhavanti parasya pungso. Bhaktyatutosh Bhagavan Gajayut. Ladies? Manye dhanabhi janarupa tapakshutaujas. Tejak prabhava bhala paurusha buddhi yogaha. Naradhanaya hibabandi parasya pungso. Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayutha bhaya. Manhe dhanabi janarupa tapakshutaujas. Tejak prabhava balapaurusha buddhi yoga. Naradhanaya hibabandi parasya pungso. Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayuta paya. Manhe dhanabdi janarupa tapakshutaujas. Tejak prabhava malapaurusha buddhi yoga. Naradhanaya hibabandi parasya pungso. Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayuta paya. Manye, I consider. Dhana, riches. Abhijana, aristocratic family. Rupa, personal beauty. Tapaha, austerity. Shruta, knowledge from studying the Vedas. Ojaha, sensory prowess. Tejaha, bodily effulgence. Prabhava, influence. Bala, bodily strength. Paurusha, diligence. Buddhi, intelligence. Yogaha, mystic power. Na, not. Aradhanaya, for satisfying. He, indeed. Bhavanti, are. Parasya, of the transcendent, of the transcendent. Pungsaha, supreme personality of Godhead. Bhaktya, simply by devotional service. Tutosha, was satisfied. Bhagavan, the supreme personality of Godhead. Gajayutapaya, unto the king of the elephants, Gajendra. Translation, Prahlad Maharaj continued, one may possess wealth, an aristocratic family, beauty, austerity, education, sensory expertise, luster, influence, physical strength, diligence, intelligence, and mystic yogic power. But I think that even by all these qualifications, one cannot satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, one can satisfy the Lord simply by devotional service. Gajendra did this, and thus the Lord was satisfied with him. Please repeat. Prahlad Maharaj continued, one may possess wealth, an aristocratic family, beauty, austerity, education, sensory expertise, luster, influence, physical strength, diligence, intelligence, and mystic yogic power. But I think that even by all these qualifications, one cannot satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, one can satisfy the Lord simply by devotional service. Gajendra did this, and thus the Lord was satisfied with him. Purport. No kind of material qualification is a means for satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, only by devotional service can the Lord be known. Bhaktya mam abhijanati. Unless the Lord is pleased by the service of a devotee, the Lord does not reveal himself. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrataham. This is the verdict of all shastras. Neither by speculation nor by material qualifications can one understand or approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead? All these demigods and Lakshmi even could not satisfy you, says to Lord Nrisimhadev, then how can I possibly offer prayers? I'm much less qualified than them. So in this way, he was expressing his utter humility before the Lord, which is a qualification. This is one of the attractive features. This is one way in which Krishna becomes pleased, is by he sees our utter lack of any kind of pride or arrogance or ego in approaching him. And now in this verse, he's continuing with that theme, and he's listing some of the qualities that are recognized in society, civilized society anyway, as honorable. They give you a certain amount of distinction. So within these qualities that he lists, there's these famous four: Janmaishraya Shuddha Shibir, good birth, aristocratic birth, wealth, education, and personal beauty. Generally speaking, most opulences fit within those categories, and they're highly coveted by everyone in this world who is a condition. Of course, you can't very well covet good birth. You can envy others, certainly, for taking a higher birth than you. And those who are have taken a high birth, which in this age means you're born into money, basically. There's very little recognition of any other quality of distinction than money. This is mentioned in the 12th canto, that after some time, basically, if you're rich, then you're honored. And you can also buy so-called justice, and you can control things. But here he's listing those and many others. Sensory expertise. There's different kinds of strength recognized. He mentions Oja and Bala. Oja is sensory strength. You can see very well, you can hear very acutely, like that. And Bala is like physical strength. You can lift very great weights and things like that. So these are different kinds of strength. Influence. This is charisma. You know, is it the persons who are most famous and who are, you know, can are leaders of men and can influence so others? Are they going to be recognized by Krishna? Is it those who have the strongest body or the most powerful senses? Diligence, intelligence, and mystic yogic power. So the fact of the matter is that even just the effort to attain these things, the desire for them, even if you can't attain them, is a disqualification for understanding Krishna. You see? Because if you're a little bit pious and you think that there is a God, and I'd like to attain wealth or great health, the strength, fame, whatever you're looking for, then I'll go to God to pray for them. And this is basically what religion means throughout the world. People are engaged in the hard struggle for existence. There are so many things that are frightening them, causing them anxiety or whatever, some disaster has happened. And they take shelter of religion, of the church, the temple, the mosque, the whatever, in order to get some relief. In order to pray for some benediction, generally within these categories. But this is kicked out at the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. This is kicked out. Dharma projita kaitavo tra. Tra means here. Here in the Bhagavatam, these kind of cheating religions or dharmas are completely rejected. So the point is that those aspirations that one have block one from actually understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is. And this is explained in the very beginning of the Nectar of Devotion, or the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, this defining verse. This is like, you know, the mission statement for ISKCON, for all of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, as taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma janavatam anukulena krishna anushilanam bhaktir uttama. That the bhakti that we're concerned with here in the Nectar of Devotion, you know, the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, is defined as follows. First, negatively, what isn't it? It cannot be covered. Any kind of bhakti that's covered even a slight degree means it says anyabhilashita shunyam, devoid of all other desires, categorized as jnana, karma, etc. desire for knowledge, which generally means impersonal liberation, karma, fruit of gain of any kind, going to heaven or whatever, or some benediction here, or adi, anything else you might come up with, you know, that's simply centered on you. It cannot be covered to a slight degree. Anavrata means not covered or diluted or alloyed. Prabhupada's famous unalloyed bhakti, right, we're looking for. It's alloyed, it's mixed up, and therefore that's not what this book is about. That's not what this movement is about. Since we're supposed to be Rupa Anugas, this is his book, he's starting out his book with that. So that's what it's not. Well, what is it? Anukulena Krishnanushilanam Bhaktiruttama. So Anukulena, this verse has been analyzed in great detail by Jiva Goswami and other commentators. So Anukulena means favorably, with the intention of favorably serving Krishna for his pleasure. Krishnanushilanam, behavior or activity following in the footsteps of previous acharyas, according to as Krishna himself has laid it out in books like the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, especially directly Bhagavad Gita. So Anukulena Krishnanushilanam Bhaktiruttama. So the idea is that Krishna can only be approached. He's only attracted to one thing because he has all of these things in unlimited degree. If you have a little bit of austerity or education, knowledge, wealth, what is that? You know, how is that going to attract Krishna? You're attracted to things that you don't have, that you want, right? Well, Krishna has unlimited physical strength and diligence and intelligence. So if you try to approach him with that qualification, you know, forget it. But what he doesn't have is our love and devotion. That's what he wants. That's the whole thing. So the way to attract Krishna's attention and to attract Krishna's blessings is to develop or reawaken our natural love and devotion for him. And real pure love and devotion, you know, prema as opposed to kama, it means that there's no concern on your part for anything. You're simply concerned with the pleasure of the beloved. Now, in this world, we have a reflection of that. Most purely in the mother's love or the father's love for the child. Helpless little child. Right? So, any parent will tell you that really the children, they thrive on attention and care and love. You know? And, if this is one of the great tragedies of the present age because of the way things have developed, you have both the, if there are two parents at home, generally they both have to work in order to just maintain. And so you have the children being raised by people who don't really care for them, which is a disaster for the development of the child. So that's another point. But the idea is that, selfless love, simply concerned for the welfare of the other, even to the point of giving the life. A mother will, you know, save the child, throw the child out of the way of the oncoming truck, and the mother will die sometimes. You know, sometimes they do that. That means complete selfless love. So, but that's, you know, it's imperfect in the material world because there can never be that perfect reciprocation, and things change. The child grows up, he's not so helpless anymore, you know, he runs off, does something, and when they get older, you know, that same mood is there. I remember my mother, she was like 85, and I was like 54, you know, I would visit her, and sometimes she's still wondering, are you eating well? You know, here's to take something, you know, still that same care. She, just like the original example is when, you know, Krishna was in, visited a Kurukshetra, because everything is there in perfection in Krishna, right? This mood he showed. So, he visits Kurukshetra after many, many years, right? And finally meets the Brijbasis after many, many years of separation. So he's a prince with 16,108 queens and hundreds of thousands of children. And, you know, but when he sees Mother Yashoda, she takes him on the lap and she's crying again, just like she did before. she's seeing him as that way. You know, as her child, her loving child, helpless child. So the point is that Krishna responds to that and that only. That helpless supplication or that sincere love, that attention. And the example given here is Gajendra. Now, why Gajendra? Well, Gajendra obviously doesn't have much, you know, austerity, education. He's an elephant. He's an elephant after all. He may be a big elephant on heavenly planets, but and so he's completely unqualified with all these material things that he just listed here. And yet he was able to attract the attention and the blessings and the intervention, if you will, of Vishnu by his sincere prayers, by his helpless his prayers in Canto 8. You know, the story was, well, you know, it's interesting because Gajendra is illustrative in other ways. Now, let's just review, you know, Gajendra's pastimes. Now, Gajendra, I think he had been cursed. Wasn't he Indrajumna, somebody? He had been cursed. He becomes a big elephant. But he was the king of the elephants. He's Gaja Indra, right? So he has many followers, you know, of she elephants. And he would really go bathe in the water. What was the name of the lake? I forget the lake. You know, what's in the heavenly planets. What is it? Ikshikuta. So it's this idyllic scene. You know, it's a heavenly scene. And he's enjoying it as an elephant. You know, going in, enjoying as elephants do in the water. You know, this, he would do this periodically and come out and be surrounded by his acolytes, you know. And he's doing this on and on and on. Years, many years. So one day, he went into that lake, which was his place of pleasure. It's very, very illustrative, you know. This was where he's really going to enjoy. But instead of enjoying, suddenly, boom, a powerful crocodile grabs hold of his leg, you know. So suddenly, the whole enjoying mood is burst, and now suddenly there's great danger, right? So he's more powerful than this crocodile, as he is, but he's out of his element. So he can't get out. He can't get free, and he can't pull out of the water. So he's stuck in the water fighting with, you know, this crocodile who's trying to pull him in, and he's pulling out. So it goes on for 1,000 years like that. And finally, he's getting exhausted, and he realizes he's doomed, you know. So at that point, he remembers some prayers that he knew from his previous life. He doesn't know exactly who the prayer is to, you know, but he starts uttering his prayer. And the quality of the prayer is such that none of the demigods can fit the bill. The only one who actually fits that prayer is Vishnu himself. They're very beautiful prayers. By ordering those prayers and, you know, lifting up that lotus flower as an offering, you know, pluck the lotus flower growing in the lake, it lifts it up as an offering to the Supreme who doesn't know the name. He attracted the attention of Vishnu. He comes down on Garuda. He cuts the crocodile's, you know, mouth off and liberates Gajendra. He also liberates the crocodile, who was another great personality. You know, and this whole thing was kind of engineered. And Gajendra was blessed. So what qualification did he have to get that? The only qualification was he uttered these prayers in absolute helplessness and sincerity, you know. So this is what attracts Krishna's attention, is as was indicated in the previous verse, the utter humility and really recognizing the reality that we have. There's so much in the Bhagavatam describing that. You know, when you actually think about our situation, and we should, this is part of what's called sambandha. Well, what are we really? You know, what is this world? Where does it come from? What's our relationship with the Supreme like that? So we walk around in these bodies, right? But the body is given to us. It's a very complicated contraption. You know, it defies understanding. In the greatest medical science, there's so many mysteries of how it's actually working. But it's also very fragile. You know, I mean, any little thing. I was thinking as I was driving up here, because I like to drive in the evening. So I came up Wednesday night. Going along, you know, 75, 80. I don't like to go long, faster than 80, you know. I just go with the flow. Everybody's moving, and you know. And I know what they're feeling, because I'm also starting to feel that, you know, oh, we're cool, you know. But here you are. You're in two contraptions. One is this body, and the other is this machine of, you know, this hulk of iron and other things it's made of, steel. And anything can go wrong. Something can fall out there. You know, you can get a blowout. Some drunk guy can knock into you. It's such a dangerous situation. But Maya is such that it lulls you into complacence. I remember for a long time, I didn't drive. My service didn't require it. For like years, I didn't drive. And then when I went to Miami in 83, I started needing to drive again. So I got back on the road, and suddenly, you know, the white knuckles, you know, the actual situation. Do I remember how, you know, merging in? Gee, that's difficult. You know what I mean? Things that you do all the time, right? But that's the actual nature of it. Or flying in the plane, right? flying in the plane. They try to make it such that you forget you're in the plane. You know, can I give you some more wine? Would you like something to eat? You know, if you're in first class, oh, I'm really, you know, I can lie back. You can fall asleep. You're in a little tin can at 32,000 miles. At any moment, you know, and sometimes it happens, is, you know, for no reason, there's some storm. I remember there was years ago, there was just this horrible storm that just pulled this plane right out of the sky. You know, you don't expect that. So, kind of, you know, we're not supposed to be on edge all the time and nervous wrecks. But the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, the teaching is we should recognize our fragile position, like a little drop of water on a lotus leaf from the song. You know, so what do we do for that? Now, the materialists, when they're in a dangerous position, you know, they become extremely frightened, terrified, and you try to somehow manage the thing so you can get through it, some material thing that you can do. Or, think of the insurance industry. The insurance industry is simply built on fear. They try to frighten you. What if something happens to you? Who's going to support your little baby? And they show the child, you know, so helpless and so cuddly, you know. Oh, yeah. I got to buy some insurance so that they'll have my, you know. Or the car, or fire, or the health. And there's so many different things, you know. And it's all based on fear. Huge, multi-billion-dollar industry, right? So there's a material solution to the material problem. You're visualizing, oh, I may die or something. You know, well, when you die, what's going to happen to you? You're going to forget all about that house and everything and the family. You'll be in another situation. So all the money you pay, it's really foolish, you know. Okay, but insurance has its place. I know that. But the idea is that to obsess over it and to have only that solution, only material solutions, you know, this is how materialists respond to the difficulties of the world. But how do we respond to it? Well, he said, "Tunam yateta nabateta namritti yavat." There's a verse where he says, "You retain the human form of life, which, like any other forms, are temporary. At any moment, it can go. So, but it's special because it's artadam." This verse is spoken by Krishna in the Uddhava Gita. It can actually give us the ultimate goal of life, where we can get beyond all danger. You see, just like Prahlad. Prahlad Maharaj, he was able to transcend the danger even in the face of, even on this plane, because he was protected by the Lord. What to speak of going back to Godhead, not having this material body. We don't need this material body. It's unnatural. So this verse from the 11th canon says, we should quickly strive for the ultimate good. We're back to that theme again. Nikshaya Saya Vishaya. Because the sense gratification that we're hankering after, we've experienced it all in all other species of life. So this is how the wise person, the intelligent person, responds to the admittedly tenuous position of everything in this material world. Well, we can't waste time. You never know what's going to happen. You know? So therefore we should chant Hare Krishna, we should be very assiduous in our practice of sadhana bhakti. So that we can get back into the safe haven of Vaikuntha, beyond all anxiety, beyond all fear. So what's being expressed here is that all of these other kinds of material qualifications are useless in this regard. They're simply other variations of maya or illusion. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has this song or poem where he talks about how even, you know, material education, you know, higher education, and he was highly educated, just makes you more foolish in many ways. If there's no element of Krishna consciousness in it, of Shabda Brahman, that kind of education we want. But material education, it makes you think that you're highly educated, that you know what is what. Just like I'm so amazed, you know, that they've constructed these theories. Dhruta Karma Prabhu has written books about it. How somehow or other, life has come to this point, has arisen, and has developed in all of these wonderful species and the intelligence and the consciousness. It's all come about. The ultimate cause of it is pure chance. There's no intelligence behind it. And this is what they teach in the schools, and they derive this idea of intelligent design, intelligent designer, you know. That's just hidden creationism. We know creationism is wrong, right? So But somehow or other, they've convinced themselves by all of their studies and all their PhDs and their investigation that there's nobody ultimately controlling or creating or guiding this world. You know, this is practically the first thing you learn when you come through the doors. Maya Jakshena Prakati Suyate Sacharajana. Krishna says, by my superintendence, by my intelligence, this Prakriti is working. But they only see the Prakriti. They only see the nature. And so, you know, what's the cause of, global warming? Oh, the cause is too many greenhouse gases. No. You have to go behind it. The cause is the greed and the lust of building up this completely artificial civilization, so-called civilization. As Prabhupada called it, the automobile civilization, this truck going woom, 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 you know? I think he may have been in Brooklyn when he said that. We're right near the Cross Bronx Expressway or something. And just like here, you always have Venice Beach going on. You're between, I-10 and Venice Boulevard, you know? So just imagine if they didn't have all those cars, you know? They're all the trucks. The civilization would just, turn on its back like an insect, didn't know what to do, you know? The whole thing depends on burning the fossil fuels, you know what I mean? So, we have to control the fossil fuels, you know? Well, we'll have some other kind of fuel. Not that we have to simplify our lives, that we have to live a simple life that's not ultimately agricultural based, you know, based on the cow and the land and, you know. No. You know? They don't take the cause back far enough, you see? You try to adjust. You try to make an adjustment in your technique so that you can still enjoy as much sense gratification, but we'll do it smarter now. You know, so that we'll trick them in the material energy, the nature. So so this takes you farther and farther away from Krishna. All of these things, yogic power, mystic yogic power, you know, great yogis, we have so many examples, Vishwamitra, Salaberry, and others, who had these great mystic powers, but they weren't devotees. You know, they were challenging Krishna. Krishna's Yogeshwara. He's Yogeshwareshwara. He's the master of so-called masters of yoga. There's no question. You can't impress Krishna with that. You can't challenge Krishna's yogic power. So these different elements here, these different, coveted things or powers or qualities don't help. What really helps is this falling at the feet of the preceptor, in Arjuna's case, of Krishna directly, realizing our helplessness, Trinadapisuni Chena, Gajendra, coming to the point of Gajendra, lifting up the lotus flower, whatever we can bring to offer, you know, Krishna, our prana, artha, dhiya, vacha. Krishna says, well, how can you perfect your life? He says to his friends, Etava janma sapalyam dehinam hideshu prana ata diyavata shaya achananam sada. This is actually a verse about Sankirtan. What he says there is that you want to, every living being, every human being, can perfect his life by using his life energy, prana, with his wealth, his intelligence, and his words for the benefit of others. For the benefit of others. So what is the benefit of others? We know the only benefit is knowledge about Krishna. So really, if we want to perfect our lives in Krishna consciousness, we have to have a program where we're plugged into the preaching effort, directly distributing books, the holy name, the prasadam, or working for that, or the temple, as I pointed out in San Diego. We should always remember that the temple is actually part of the whole movement of preaching Krishna consciousness. It gives a facility, not only for the residents or those who are close in, but for anyone who's a little pious to come through the door and appreciate the beauty of Rukmini Dwarkadish and Gornataya, Jagannath Baladeva Subhadra. And just that appreciation is the beginning of their spiritual life. You know, or maintaining the restaurant where they can take prasadam and this way get attracted to Krishna in this way. Somehow or other, becoming attracted and trying to attract others to Krishna. That's what attracts Krishna's attention. I was reading recently, I give so many classes in San Diego, but this verse from the Hari Bhakti Vilas, There's so many verses in the Hari Bhaktivasa about the holy name. And Krishna is speaking the glories of the holy name to Arjuna, his own holy. And one of the things he says is that anyone who chants my name, even indifferently, just beginning to chant, yeah, I'll never forget their name. Think about it. We don't often think that Krishna knows our name. But that's what, this is reciprocation. Well, we're chanting Krishna's name, so he must be chanting our name somehow. I mean, my name, I don't know. But the point is that it's absolutely reciprocal. And just as if we give up all other cares and we become Krishna conscious and we concern ourselves with trying to please Krishna and trying to please Krishna's dear devotees, which really pleases Krishna the most, then he will also become concerned about helping us to purify our hearts and become Krishna conscious. He's also concerned. If you're not concerned with Krishna, he's not concerned with you on a personal level. Ultimately, he's like a father, he's always concerned. But some of that concern for those who have completely forgotten Krishna and don't even want to know about him and have turned to the demonic ways is to punish. That's also a concern. Tough love. He loves everybody, but some of it comes in the form of tough love, isn't it? Where the parents just throw up their hands and say, I can't do anything with him or her anymore. I'll put them under the care of some severe person and maybe he'll beat some sense into them. The love is still there, supposedly, but you know, some of them are so far gone that they need to be chastised, and hopefully they'll not get them. So that's what this material world is, you know. So the punishment is going on, but by Krishna's grace, we've come into the influence of Krishna's pure devotee, and by chanting the holy name is so purifying. I was just reading also about the conversation between the Vishnu Dutas and the Yama Dutas, the beginning of the sixth canon, the Ajamil pastime. How powerful is that holy name? How fortunate we are just to have chanted, as much as we've chanted, even just one name. Just that one Narayan that Ajamil chanted at the very end of his life, almost the end of his life, he had a second chance. We know he had the second chance. We have a book by that. Purified him of all that sinful reaction. You know? Because Krishna's attention was called. Narayan's attention was called. And when he becomes attentive to you, then, you know, the sky's the limit. There's no residue. You know? But if you're doing it by some other means, even some tapasya or some atonement or this or that, then it's not gonna dig deep, deep, deep and remove the desire for sin. The desire for deviation. And then you never know what's going to happen. You know, the string of the chain of chain victimization of your karma is goes on and on. So the holy name, we've been given the most powerful form of the holy name, this Hare Krishna mantra, most attractive. And, you know, the wonderful, easy way to chant, you know, very attractive, Sankirtan, what could be more pleasing? And this is... And what we need to try to perfect and think about is the quality of the chanting. The attention, the mood, you know, giving up the offenses. That's really the key to real advancement in devotional service. So it all comes down again to what Prahlad is expressing in these two verses we've read so far of his prayers, is this humble supplication. Really recognizing our helplessness. Like there's this one... a prayer, so many prayers that I picked up from the Stavamala, Rupa Goswami's Stavamala, which is an anthology of his poems. So he sings, Manasija Pari Dushte, Labda Patosmi Dushte, Timada Gahana Rupe, Hanta Sangsara Kupe, Ajita Nikala Rakshahe, Tamundara Daksham, Upanayama Mahaste, Bhakti Rajum Namaste. Some of you may have heard this before, but it's ever fresh. This says, fallen in this deep and dark and dirty well of Maya, threatened by the snake of lust, whose venom burns like fire. Helplessly I plead, O Lord, whose strength is ne'er in doubt. Place the rope of bhakti in my hands and pull me out. So the word there is ajita. You know, ajita is one of Krishna's names, unconquerable. So there's a lot in this prayer. First of all, we're helpless. You know, we're in this blind well. We don't, it's covered. There's darkness everywhere. You know, the sun, it's all artificial light. Even the sun is artificial. Ultimately, natural light is the Brahmajyoti. You know, no need for the sun, the moon, or electricity. So, we're in this dark world, and we're helpless. We've fallen, and it's contaminated. Just by being here, you get infected by the modes of nature and the sinful desires. Right? Contaminated. And there's always that threat of material desire, the serpent of desire, and your own senses are like unconquerable serpents described by Prabodhananda Saraswati. So we're kind of, it's a tough situation. We're in this blind well, the snake of lust is threatening us, you know, what's our recourse? There's only one, Krishna. So he calls out, please give me place the rope of bhakti in my hand. So that's sadhana bhakti. In other words, like Uddhava, he has a similar prayer. In fact, it may have inspired this one by Rupa Goswami. So he's, you know, how does that rope of bhakti arrive to us? In the form of words, in the form of the transcendental sound vibration emanating from Krishna, but more importantly, from the mouth of the spiritual master, from the books of Srila Prabhupada, which all came out from his transcendental mouth. You know, and mind. He typed a few manuscripts himself early on. But the point is that that's the rope. That rope is in the form of the holy name and in the form of chanted purely by the preceptor and in the form of these words. Now, how do we take hold of that rope? Because Krishna can only pull us out if we hang on to the rope. This is our independence. If we let go of the rope, we're stuck in the well. Even Krishna can't pull us out. If we're determined to stay here, we can't become Krishna conscious. That was another Prahlad's teachings. You remember? Matyanda Krishna Padatak Svatova. Mitobi Bhadita Griha Vatanam. We've taken a strong vow. I will enjoy a materialistic family life. Griha Vatanam. And so the senses are out of control. You can't become Krishna conscious. He's telling his father, don't worry, father, you won't become Krishna conscious. Because you will never bathe yourself in the foot dust of the pure devotees of Vishnu, your archenemy. So he's saying like that. So we're in that situation. So we need to hang on to that rope by careful practice of sadhana bhakti. That's how we hang on to the rope. And then Krishna will pull us out. So the principle of, you know, maintaining the edge we were talking about yesterday of feeling oneself dina. Of feeling oneself helpless and kind of having no other recourse. This is what dainya really means, than Krishna. That takes practice. That's a fine art. Because there's also, as we mentioned yesterday, there are obstacles and pitfalls on the path of bhakti. And there, because you can, if you practice devotional service nicely, then Krishna will give you so many facilities. You'll become, you can even develop some mystic powers. Just like this, the book distribution to me is a mystic power. I know. Because I never kind of crossed over the Vaitarani River so that I could do that. But I mean, to be able to, you know, meet somebody who the last thing in their mind was, you know, Bhagavad Gita, you know, transcendental knowledge, and somehow attract their attention and turn them to the point where they're favorably giving some donation and taking this transcendental knowledge and doing it repeatedly. That's an empowerment. You know, we may forget the history. Those who know the history of book distribution, at first it was inconceivable. The books are all piling up. The TLCs and the Krishna books were piling up in the go-downs, as we call them, the warehouses, one room in a house that we had rented somewhere. And the devotees, you know, probably wanted them distributed. Well, okay, you know, we'll take them to the bookstores, you know, maybe they'll take a few on consignment, you know. Well, that didn't do the trick. You know, so was it Buddhimanta? You know, the few pioneers tried. They tried. And somehow Krishna gave the words that they would say that was right, and they took a few books. And that was so inspiring and so blissful. I said, we can actually do this, you know, and go out. Oh, he sold 10 books today. You know, wow, you know, miracle. So that's a mystic power, right? But we've also seen that mystic power turned toward material things. You know, at some point, you know, for some reason, you're just taking stickers out. That's all you got, stickers. You're keeping your body and soul together through that. Or selling this or selling that or whatever, you know. Or convincing someone, even devotees, you know, because you become influential, this influence, right? You become a little charismatic. You know, in convincing devotees to enter into some pyramid scheme. Yeah, that's happened also. Is that a pitfall? You know, that's like 180 degrees. Instead of serving the devotees, you're cheating the devotees. So these the people who do this were once dancing and chanting and going out on Hari Nam and chanting their rounds. So I'm saying that we should be careful and not, you know, to avoid the offenses and don't play footsie with Maya because she's more skilled than we are. You know, we think we can fool around with Maya, but the modes of nature are there and you let yourself get influenced and before long, you'd be deviating. And the sure sign that someone is having trouble is that somehow or other they're feeling uncomfortable in the association of devotees. And they can't just come and just have a kirtan and sit peacefully and listen to Bhagavatam class. So, you know, it's not easy to go back to Godhead. Because even in the process of devotional service, if we're not careful, that's why there's so many instructions in Upadeshamrita throughout the Bhagavatam. You know, what to avoid and what to do in order to keep yourself strong in devotional service. So this is wonderful prayers of Prahlad. They're so inspiring. And those who are old-timers can remember when each of these books came out, it practically transformed everybody. The fourth canto was a revolution. Fifth canto, my God, all the universe? Can't believe it. You know, I didn't know that. Sixth canto with the Jamil and the holy name. Yeah, yeah. And now the seventh canto with Prahlad and these prayers. You know, so we should feel like that. That reading Bhagavatam is like an adventure. You know, again, reliving it. You can go through it 10 times. You pick up so many new things. And these prayers, you're now starting here. These are conclusive prayers. These are quoted by Prabhupada up and down. There's at least 10 of them that he quoted all the time. Next one, tomorrow's verse, is an often quoted verse. So this is a great adventure now. Starting. Prahlad's prayer is just coming in. Okay, I'll read the translation one more time. Prahlad Maharaj continued, one may possess wealth, an aristocratic family, beauty, austerity, education, sensory expertise, luster, influence, physical strength, diligence, intelligence, and mystic yogic power. But I think that even by all these qualifications, one cannot satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, one can satisfy the Lord simply by devotional service. Gajendra did this, and thus the Lord was satisfied with him. Any comments or questions on some of these points? Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, at the beginning you were mentioning that the word global warming, it came to my mind that many people books at the airport in time, and the elections were coming very close, and there was a whole world where propounded this philosophy of global warming.
So this had regards, if you didn't understand, Al Gore, who was like the main guy for... Yeah. I mean, one of the big things is that he was owner of some of the big cattle farm, you know, and it's a fact that this all this meat eating and cattle are one of the biggest causes of global warming. And other things. Yeah, yeah. Well, I would say yes, but I don't know it's hard to gauge the proportion. In other words, to the degree that we're compromising our principles or we feel we're forced to, You know, often this happens because devotees who can't live in the temple or right in the community, well, you have to interact, you have to have a job, you know, and at your job, you can't be chanting and dancing and giving out books. You have to do what they say to do, you know, and so in this way, you're plugged in, you know. And so we should feel anxious about that, you know, and therefore be even more eager to preach Krishna consciousness, give out books when we can, and, you know, to try to interest people in Krishna consciousness, so that the balance is way on the side of that, you know, we're not helping this demonic society. It's very difficult. You know, you have to be, if you have a bank account, what are they doing with the money? They're lending it out to some, you know, demonic thing, or, you know, or just living in this society, you get plugged in. I remember when I was a kid, I had no idea of spiritual life, but I was sensitized to this idea of not participating in the war in any way. So that, you know, I was 17, I was doing these demonstrations. No way I'm going to, you know, get the draft card. There was all this, you know, burning of draft cards, sending in draft resistance, because I didn't want to participate. But then I, you know, I eventually dropped out of college and I got a job. Okay, they're deducting, as everyone knows, they withhold federal and state taxes. Well, what's happening with that, those taxes? It's going to the war machine, some of it, you know. So I felt horrible about that. So that's been one of the blessings of being, you know, full-time, 40 years, I haven't paid any federal taxes. You know, I feel good about that. But inevitably, you have to participate. So that's understood for the means of preaching. Just like we have to cut down so many trees in order to make these books. But that's all right. That's forgiven, because the books are meant to create a civilization where you don't cut down the trees anymore. You know what I mean? Ultimately, the cow protection. You know, we don't like to get the store-bought milk. Well, what are we going to do? We have to have ghee to serve the deed and so forth. But ideally, you know, we're trying to start something in Escondido, a farm like that, you know, our own farms, where ahimsa milk. It's a good, to work toward that. We don't, The tendency is, because the modes are so powerful, to kind of surrender on various points, of, you know. But the more we do that, then undercuts the purity of the devotion. You're kind of compromising on certain principles. So this Bhagavatam and the movement is meant to bring about a revolution in this misguided civilization. That's right at the beginning, chapter 5, Tad Bhagava Sargo, it's in the preface. Prabhupada wanted to start a revolution, and he knew he was the revolution. The only revolution that matters is the revolution in the consciousness, you know. And that, so if we're participating in that full on, then these other things, I think, will be forgiven. But on the plea, you know, that we can't really do anything about it, to just not feel the urgency of you know, developing Krishna consciousness, then you're falling victim. You're falling victim to the powerful society at large. This, you know, the kirtan, like we had this, you know, nice, it's such a, I love having kirtan here. You have so many devotees, beautiful acoustics, wonderful deities, that's the first thing. You know, it's very enlivening. But, you know, we go out. I'm hoping to be able to go out tonight. I think I'll be able to. It's so strong. You know, the modes are so, whether you go to Santa Monica or Hollywood, I don't know if you go to Hollywood anymore. You do sometimes go? Saturdays. So, you know, if you stop chanting, if you walk down that same street alone, you know, it's a whole different experience, right? You're walking down there. It's just so strong, the modes of passion and ignorance, isn't it? But you're walking down with a party, you're chanting loudly, you have like a kavacha. You know a kavacha? It's an armor of sound. And they can't get in there. You know, all of their so-called attractions, you just bounce off. Who cares, you know, Hare Krishna, isn't it? But otherwise, you know, they can get in. And so that kavacha, that sound of the Hare Krishna mantra is a great kavacha. We should try to be, you know, renewing that at every moment and propagating it. That's really what will protect us and anyone else who takes to it from the influence of the modes of nature. Anyone else? Savas Prabhu. Yes. Well, those are the two most famous prayers. First, he says, Naibod Vijay Paradarach. He says, I don't have any problem. I'm not in any anxiety, my Lord. You know, I've already crossed over the Vaitarani River, the barrier between the material and the spiritual world. Because at any time, and this is very significant for us, at any time, or every time, I can just chant your glories and immerse myself in an ocean of nectar. Tvadviya Gayana Mahamrita Magna Chitta, the big ocean of nectar consisting of your glories, which is unlimited. So how can I be? You know, I'm not in any anxiety. But I am in anxiety, I'm lamenting for these fools and rascals who are trying to enjoy Maya Sukhaya, illusory happiness. The Sanskrit is great. They're bearing the burden. Maya Sukhaya Bharamudvahito. It's a great burden to try to enjoy these senses, you know, and ultimately you fail. So he's realizing that, and then the next verse completes the thought. It says, Prayana Deva Munayo Sovamukti Kama, that for the most part, these so-called sages, munis, they're concerned only about their own mukti, their own liberation. And he calls it, he nails it, just like mukti kama. It's a type of lust to want your own liberation. The hell with everyone else. And he said, Amaunam charandi bhajane naparata nishta. Naparata nishta, not being determined for the welfare of others, they go where there's no people. Vijane. And they practice silence. And people need to hear Hare Krishna, but they're practicing silence. Maunam charandi bhajane naparata nishta. But he says, I'm not like that. Naitan vihaya kripana vimamuksha eko. I'm not simply after my lone liberation. Vimamuksha eko. I'm not going to give up. Naitan Bihaya, these kripanas, these wretches who don't know anything about you. Because Nanyam Tarasti Shadanam Brahmato Nupashe. I don't see any other shelter for those who are wandering around this universe but you. And I can give them you. That's all I have. So this is exactly the mood of Prabhupada. You know, he had no problem. He's sitting in Vrindavan chanting Hare Krishna. You know, and many of his god brothers just stayed there. You know, and all the... But he took the trouble, you know, the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's infused with that, and he left Vrindavan a tremendous effort and trouble in order to give us, you know, Krishna consciousness, because he had compassion. So that's the ideal. It's like the flag of the Sankirtan movement. Those two verses is exactly. That, I think, came from Bhaktisiddhanta. I think that came from Bhaktisiddhanta, that when he sent them to London, you know, they were writing back, and he said, well, look, if you have to go to, you know, and eat meat, do it as long as you can preach, you know. He wouldn't. Did he?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. In other words, whatever it takes, you know, somehow or other. And that principle Prabhupada showed when he came to America. You know, just chant. Somehow or other, get him to chant, and the process will take place. I remember that prayer. I'm unqualified, Prabhupada says. Exactly reflective of this mood of Prahlad at these first two prayers. But I have great faith in the holy name. I have great faith in the holy name. So if you want me to dance, you make me dance. You guide my words. Give me the words. And you see, Krishna reciprocated. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.